Hi, welcome back to another episode of Force Proximity. Thank you for allowing us to have some time off. We took off 2 weeks because of our trip to Florida, and we just didn't pre-record anything, and we didn't record while we were gone. So we got a little two-week vacation, and it was great.
And now we're ready to talk about Christmas movies.
Now we're ready for Christmas. That's right. So, you want to talk about Florida first?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we went to Florida to see my mom and dad and all my family members for Thanksgiving. But while we were there, we did 3 days at Disney World. And the first day, I was ready to never go back again.
The first day was Epcot, which you generally like, but we did not do it right.
We did it completely not right. It got off to a bad start. It was
raining.
It was raining. Hank's card didn't work, so he couldn't get in. Mm-hmm. So we had to go to guest services, and we drove to the park from the hotel, which we shouldn't have done. We should have gone to my sister's hotel and took the ferry boat over. And it was just a mess. And we didn't navigate the park correctly.
We were ride chasing. And you can't do that when the park is as big as Epcot is.
Yeah, you can't ride chase. You just gotta...
You gotta go to the next thing and hope there's not a long wait for the thing you want to do. And if there's one thing you want to do, that's the line you wait in.
Yep.
But unfortunately, we went there on the busiest days of the year. Mm-hmm. And when all these new things have rolled out, there's new rides like the Ratatouille ride that I was really looking forward to for Hank.
We didn't get to go on that.
Didn't get to go on that because it was never not a 3 hour wait.
Yep.
And
as good as Hank was, I would never subject him to 3 hours.
I wouldn't subject me to 3 hours. We'll ride it in a few years once people realize it's not that great.
Yeah. He did wait for some long rides, and he made it really well. Epcot was a bust.
And the next day was Star Wars Day.
Hollywood Studios Day. And that started out not great. And then Hank and I kind of branched off into our own thing, and it got really good.
Mm-hmm.
And
we took it easy.
Yeah.
We ate when we wanted.
Yeah.
We sat when we wanted. We didn't like walk diagonally across the park again and again and again.
Yeah.
The park was smaller.
But Hollywood Studios is great.
Yeah.
That might be my favorite one now.
That's funny.
Well, to go there and there's a real Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And Kylo Ren's ship, which I got to see, but you guys
didn't.
I didn't see
that.
I know. But I got to have some time in Tatooine by myself when Dad and Hank stayed in line to ride Slinky Dog.
Yeah.
And so I had an hour and a half to go find warmth because it was freezing the night that we were there.
Now, I wouldn't say when I saw a life-size Millennium Falcon, I was about to cry. But if someone did, I get it. Like,
it's really cool to see your stuff, like,
it was so
in
cool.
The real world.
And I was late to the Star Wars game. I watched them, but I didn't really get into it until Hank.
Yeah.
I had some Star Wars video games and stuff, and I knew a lot of background, but I didn't love it until Hank loved it.
Yeah.
So
I think that's cool when parents get into their stuff because they're kids.
Had I loved it since I was Hank's age, yeah, I probably would have cried to see a real life size Millennium Falcon. But Hank he had a blast at Hollywood Studios. He made lightsabers. He made a droid, which was like, your find that saved the day.
Yeah.
Which we didn't think he was going to be able to build his droid, which he was looking forward to the most thing ever.
I know. And we found out before we even went down there that he wasn't going to be able to build his droid because I thought you needed reservations to do that. And it turned out that reservations were only welcome.
Yeah.
And we were able to slip in at the end of the night as the park was closing. We were the second to the last people, I think.
Just about. And the worst part is, earlier in the day, he saw kids playing with the droids that they built.
And he was like, oh, we're going to do that now. And we had to tell him no.
Sorry, buddy. We can't do that. And he was devastated.
Mm-hmm.
And rightfully so.
Yeah. Because they're really cool. They're huge.
They're huge.
And you can make whatever you want. I mean, as long as it's a BB-8 or an R2 unit.
You can make whatever color BB-8 or R2-D2 you want. But he got to do it. That was awesome. The Slinky dog ride, oh my gosh, was a 90-minute line. And he waited in it like a champ.
Yeah.
And about an hour and 10 minutes into the line, he said, Dad, I got to go to the bathroom. I said, okay. If we get out of line to go to the bathroom, you're not going to ride this ride. So you have a choice. Hold it or don't ride. Hold it and ride the ride or don't ride the ride. He says, I can hold it. And then right when we're getting to the, like, you can see the cars.
Ugh.
He's like, I really have to go. I was like, bud, we're almost there. We're right there. Can you just last like 10 more minutes? He said, yeah.
And he did.
He did. He lasted. We did the ride, and then we bolted to the bathroom. And it wasn't like a photo finish or anything, but it wasn't close. And he ended up peeing his pants anyway the next day.
Yeah.
But that was cool. Not the bathroom part. The fact that he waited in a 90-minute line.
Mm-hmm.
Then, before that, even, we went on the Tower of Terror.
Yes.
And we did not tell him and my niece Aria
what it was.
It was my dad, my sister, my niece Aria, and Hank.
Who's also six.
Who's also six. And we're waiting in line. And they're yucking it up in line. No, this is going to be so cool.
Yeah.
And then it was a long line. It was about an hour line.
It was. It was. Well, I didn't go on that ride. I waited with your mom, and we were waiting about an hour and 15 minutes, hour and 20, mm-hmm. I think. It was cold.
It was about an hour long line, and we got into the hotel part, and like, why is it so dusty and dirty in here? Because it's a spooky ride. It's like, oh, okay, I'm not afraid. And then we got on it. We sat down, we strapped ourselves in. They had no idea what was coming.
I've never ridden it. I don't really know what's coming. I know it drops you. That's
and the
it.
Drop comes, and they both scream so loud. Hank was grabbing my arm, hugging my arm with both his whole body.
He's still talking about that ride.
Because he liked it.
Yeah.
It got done. He said, can we do that again? And my niece was crying her eyes out, wet herself, because how scared she was. And then
he
changes.
Well, if you don't pee your pants, is it a real Disney World trip?
Yeah.
No.
And then he changes mind, so he didn't like that ride. But he really likes it.
Yeah.
I think he'll do it again when we go there.
Yeah.
And the final day was
the Magic Kingdom.
The Magic Kingdom, or as I call it, Disney World.
Yes. I call it the Magic Kingdom because that's what it's called. But everybody else calls it just Disney World.
You asked me, when you say Disney World, are you referring to the Magic Kingdom? Like, yeah, it's Disney World.
I had to clarify. Because we have been at Disney World for the past 2 days.
But the Magic Kingdom, it is magical.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about it. You get in there, it's like, wow, what is this? And I've been there so many times. Because I lived in Florida for 20 years. I've been to the Magic Kingdom a lot.
Yeah. I've been there. I hadn't been there since I was little. That was one I never went back. We went there on an orchestra trip, and I remember, like, we went to Cinderella's castle, but I didn't see a lot of the normal stuff that you see at Magic Kingdom.
Well, and I'd never been to Magic Kingdom during Christmas.
Yeah, I haven't either, and that was an experience.
That was amazing.
Yeah, and the castle, and it's the 50th anniversary, so yeah. They do everything huger, even huger than Disney World normally does it. So it was a really magical trip. The fireworks at the end, it's like, okay, now I know why this costs a fortune.
Yeah.
Because they're really, like, they're short. They're only 15 minutes, but they do it every night. And each park has some kind of, well, I don't know about Hollywood Studios, but Epcot has something too. Mm-hmm. Like a light fireworks musical extravaganza. And it's really cool. It rivals like 4th of July at DC, yeah. Their fireworks.
It was amazing. So I highly recommend the Disney trip if you haven't done it.
Yeah.
You should do it.
I think I am less of a Disney fan because for what it is, I'm not a ride person though. I like to go. I'm a walk arounder. Yeah. I want to go and walk around places and eat good food, which is why I like Epcot. And we didn't even get to do the whole country thing.
No.
But that's really it. I like the magic of the fireworks at the end of the Magic Kingdom. And it's cool when it's your kid because you get to see him excited.
That was the best part.
But I don't understand adults that are all about going to Disney.
Yeah, but I don't begrudge them either.
I don't begrudge them. I just don't understand it.
I do.
Do you?
You feel like a kid again.
I did not.
Well, then, you're not one of those adults that wants to go to Disney.
I'm not. I'm an adult that wants to go to Williamsburg.
But you never felt like a kid.
No.
So, how can you feel like a kid again if you never felt like a kid in the
right.
first place?
I would be disappointed when we were going to Disney. Like, Disney World's cool, but to me, if I got to choose, and it's like my parents are like, okay, we have, you know, $1,000 to spend on a vacation, because this would have been back in the 80s and 90s when you could. We have $1,000 to spend on a vacation. Where do you want to go? I would have said Salem, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Or Williamsburg, Virginia. Or basically any small, quaint town where you can walk around and learn about history and eat food.
Yeah.
Which I was always that.
Probably be cheaper than Disney.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think you have to do Disney if you have a child.
Yeah.
But it's a very privileged trip.
It is.
Like, if you don't have the means to stay on the property on a Disney resort, it's the Magic Kingdom, yes. You can do a day at the Magic Kingdom and, you know, go to Gatorland the next day.
Yeah.
And you'll have a great time. You don't need the genie pass for it because we didn't really need it.
No.
But yeah, they need to give them a few months. They need to figure things out with that genie thing.
Yeah.
And you can't, like, don't go and not stay at a resort. Like, don't do that to yourself. Because
yeah, if you have to,
they have made it so that there aren't just perks of staying at a Disney resort.
It's a necessity.
It's a necessity now. And just know that you're going to have to book everything at least a year in advance, which was hard to do because we were booking things during COVID times, mm-hmm. and we didn't know what was open. All the hotels still aren't open. So I think maybe because my planning experience was kind of like grudging.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge Disney fan, but I also feel like if you're going to do Disney, or, you know, if you're going to have a big trip to Orlando, if you don't live in Florida and you're doing a big Orlando trip, you could probably do Europe for the same price.
Probably.
If you're going to do Disney right, you might as well just go to like Neuschwanstein Castle in Germany. Like, see the castle that Disney's castle was built off of.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, patterned
based
after.
On.
Yeah. Just go see the real thing. Go to Romania, take a river cruise.
Well,
it's going to be about the same price.
Oh, Romania might even be cheaper.
Yeah. Croatia.
Yeah.
Like, go to an Eastern, a beautiful, gorgeous...
Like, Croatia is about as beautiful as you're going to get.
Yeah.
All right. So, that was why we did not have 2 weeks of episodes, but...
Because we were at Disney World.
We are back, and we have Love Actually, our first holiday-themed episode.
No. Didn't...
Of the year.
Didn't we watch Love Hard?
That's true. Our second holiday-themed episode.
Because I thought we were getting started on this Christmas thing, yeah. And then I told you, oh, we don't have to watch a holiday movie last week, because it's not quite December yet. We didn't end up putting that episode out.
It very is December.
We watched As Good As It Gets, by the way.
Yeah.
We'll do an episode.
Later on. We'll have to rewatch it. But.
Right.
So... I don't. Do we need to break down Love Actually? Everyone's seen Love Actually.
It's the stories of 10 couples.
Yeah,
it's coupling and uncoupling.
We are going to break it down through the couples.
We're going to break it down through the couples. But I'm just saying, overall, it's one of those mashup. Everybody knows each other some way. You kind of find out at the end.
Yeah.
But it's done in a British way, so it's subtle. It's more subtle than if it was an American movie. And it takes place at... It's basically, you know, all the holiday rom-coms. It's like, it's the romantic comedy of Christmas time in England.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like... I think you would want to choose... You would want to celebrate. If you could pick anywhere to celebrate Christmas, where would you pick?
Not England.
Yeah.
Somewhere where I'm gonna get snow, and it's not like Switzerland or Austria.
Well, I was thinking you would choose Germany or Austria.
Yeah.
Like a German speaking.
Where it comes from.
Like, yeah.
Where, how we celebrate Christmas comes from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I might choose England.
Really?
Yes, but not London, probably. Maybe a little bit in London.
That's where the stores are.
Yeah, but I think, you know, we're doing an upcoming episode on the book 25 Days Till Christmas by Poppy Alexander, and that takes place in Bristol, and there's the Christmas steps.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I really feel like, you know, just... My knowledge of England during Christmas time from fiction. I feel like there's so many secular people in England,
mm-hmm.
but they just don't care at Christmas. Like, they're just, it's fine.
Christmas.
It's just Christmas.
Yeah.
Whereas we, like, it's such a political battle here.
Yeah.
It's like you've got the Christians who are like,
it's Christmas.
If you're not saying Merry Christmas to me, I'm going to like kick your ass.
It's Christmas.
And that's annoying. And then if you've got people like, don't say Merry Christmas to me. And that's annoying.
You crusader.
Like, come on. You just acknowledge the commercialism of Christmas, everyone.
Yeah.
Just on all sides. Like, it's commercial. Who cares? Just be a kid. Have fun.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, okay, and I'm making light of it. I know it's like a hard time of year for very many people, and there's a lot of suicides at this time of year. But, so get help, if that's you. And, yeah, I don't mean to make light of that. I just mean, like, the political battle. I'm just really over it. I just don't care.
Well, and...
Why do people care?
My co-teacher, who spent some time in Germany working there, says it is not very politically correct there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we are super politically correct in this country, where they're not so much in Europe.
Yeah.
And it's not that, like, they're offensive. It's just like, this is what we do. You're welcome to do it, because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But we're not going to stop doing it because you don't like it.
You know what? I really think it all goes back to the fact that if people are making a racist slur in America, it's not because the person saying it is one of those like hateful racists. It's because they're trying to be mean.
Yeah.
Like the goal isn't, it's not a slip and your racism came out. It's like you're intentionally saying something that you probably don't mean.
Yeah.
In order to be mean to somebody.
Yeah.
There's no law, there's no politically correct like agenda that's going to help that.
No.
And I feel like they're past that in Europe. I feel like they're past that. Like they know. Like if a word slips out, it's for language purposes rather than a statement on themselves. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Are probably going to have something to say about that, and that's fine. I'm not for everybody, but that's my opinion on like the racist kind of slurs. There's of course racism exists. I'm not saying that it's not, but that real kind of vile.
And I think real racism is more subtle.
Exactly. That's what I mean. I'm talking like that.
And systemic. It's not like someone like Kramer, what he did, which was not great, not good. It was awful. But I think that came out of frustration and anger.
Did he use the N-word?
He did.
But that's what I'm saying. I think he said that to be mean.
Yeah.
He said that because he was getting heckled. He wanted to hurt.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's not that he might not ever think of a black person in those terms.
Yeah.
He might not, that might not be his ingrained belief, but he knows that's going to cut. So he chose that word to use. It's not acceptable.
No,
it's I'm not
awful.
Condoning that behavior. I'm just saying, like, I don't think people realize that's not racism. That's just hatred and meanness. You're just trying to cut somebody.
Yeah.
It's different.
They'll do that to any person of any color. They'll just find something.
You find what is gonna hurt when you push the button.
Yeah.
And you push that button.
Yeah.
I think that's different. I think that's different from racism. But I feel like I feel like perhaps Europe is past that.
Yeah, we got
that
off
they're
on
at
a
least aware.
Real bad tangent here. Let's get back to the happy, happy stuff.
Okay. I'm also reading like David Sedaris's book, Holidays on Ice.
Yeah.
And like he's used the R word twice. I was like, whoa, you can't say that.
I don't like that one as much. Well, I don't like...
But the whole... The
hang on.
Whole...
I don't like any of them.
Okay. Yeah, of course.
But that one's like... No, I'm not going anywhere with that because I can't come out looking
etymologically, good. I like that word because I like the way it sounds. It sounds mean.
Yeah.
And when you say it, that's
so
the point.
So does the N-word.
See, I would never use the N-word. Like... I don't use like that's too slangish for me and I wouldn't use it slang words. But even if I like I don't not try to be mean sometimes, but that's never a word I would use cuz I don't like the sound of the word. I think it's like a awful sounding word.
Yeah.
But the R word, that's not an awful sounding word. That word like hits, it cuts like a knife.
Yeah.
And not because of its meaning, just because of like the structure of the word itself.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times if you're using a slur, it's like meaning has nothing to do with it. It's like the sound of the word. It's why people like the F word, because it sounds so good. It sounds strong.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, David Sedaris, who's I feel like very lauded by leftists, and he's like making fun of fat children. And just for the sake of being fat, even though they're the best actor in a play, and he's using the R word twice in one book. like one 150 page book. I'm like, really? Like, it, some of these essays were written a long time ago, but.
Oh, well, different. The line was further out a long time ago.
Right. But it's shocking now.
It is until I am shocked until I look and when it came out, like, oh no, that was okay then.
Yeah.
So it's less shocking when I know when it happened.
Yeah.
All right. Where do we start with Love Actually?
We start by, we're assuming everyone has watched it. If not,
watch. It came out in 2003. If you haven't watched it, you've watched it. No one listening to us hasn't watched this movie.
Yeah.
All right.
So I found this thing. It's 36 things you definitely didn't know about Love Actually. So we're going to go through some of them. Some of them are boring.
Okay. Thank you.
So,
it's like, oh my God, 36. 3-hour episode, and I'm going to bed at 10 o'clock tonight.
Bill Nye didn't realize that he was auditioning to play aging rocker Billy Mack.
Oh, really?
On the film's 10th anniversary, Nye told the Daily Beast, I did a rehearsal reading of the script as a favor to the great casting director who had been trying to get me into a film for a long time. I thought it was simply to help her hear the script aloud, and to my genuine surprise, I was given the job. Quite a fortuitous outcome, no. 3, his Christmas single was recorded in Abbey Road Studios.
Okay, that's cool.
I'm skipping 4 because it's boring.
Let's do 10 of them.
There were originally 14 storylines planned for the film, but unsurprisingly, it ended up feeling too confusing. 2 of them were cut. 1 same-sex love story and another featuring an African couple. That's a shame.
2003.
Yeah. So there's 12 storylines. I only counted 10.
So 2003, we can't fit in all of them. Let's get rid of the gays and let's get rid of the blacks.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I guess that is probably the only truly problematic thing I would see in this movie.
Yeah, that's very 2003.
Yeah. The lake, which Jamie and Aurelia jump into to save the manuscript, was only 18 inches deep.
How did they do that?
The two actors had to shuffle on their knees to pretend they were swimming. And Colin Firth ended up being bitten badly by a mosquito, causing his elbow to swell to the size of an avocado.
Wow. Gross.
This never happened to Mr. Darcy.
No.
Said. Oh, former Prime Minister Tony Blair ended up referencing Hugh Grant's Love Actually speech in a very meta moment.
Really?
Alluding to the scene where Grant's character stands up to the president, played by Billy Bob Thornton, with a speech that references everything from Harry Potter to David Beckham's right foot, Blair said, I know there's a bit of us that would like me to do a Hugh Grant in Love Actually and tell America where to get off, but the difference between a good film and real life is that in real life, there's the next day, the next year, the next lifetime to contemplate the ruinous consequences of easy applause.
That part never sat well with me.
That's because you're all American.
Well, then it didn't sit well with me.
It sat with me. Because you can have a bad president.
Yeah.
It doesn't make Billy Bob Thornton, like, his grossness doesn't make America gross. It makes that guy gross.
Yes.
Okay, I'm skipping through to the good ones. Oh, the awkward scene with Chris Marshall and the wedding caterer, Colin Frizzle, and the wedding caterer, Nancy, wasn't written for Love Actually. It was written for 4 Weddings and a Funeral.
Was it?
Yes.
They stuck it in there?
Yes.
That part is good. It's like, because he keeps doubling down.
I know.
Trying to get out of it, and he can't.
This movie is very well written.
It is.
Natalie was written expressly for the actress Martine McCutcheon.
Okay. Excuse me for yawning. Oof, long day at work.
Oh, the Barbie dolls that Emma Thompson's Karen wraps up as gifts are actually Ken dolls in drag.
Are they?
Yeah.
Nice.
I looked at them this time. I never really noticed them before. I was like, those are really ugly dolls. And Barbie is not that ugly. Sarah Laura Linney's flat was inspired by the author of Bridget Jones's Diary, a split level apartment.
That was a big apartment.
It's based on Helen Fielding's home. It has nothing to do with Bridget Jones's Diary, but
it's a big apartment for London.
Yeah. Okay. I think, Hugh Grant and Colin Firth's storylines were originally intended as two separate standalone films. I kind of feel gypped now.
Yeah, those have been good movies.
Because they're my favorite storylines.
Yeah.
Well, they're all my favorite storylines.
Those are good movies. Those would have been really, really good movies. Now, you'd have to find two other actors. They're too old now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
they just kept that in their back pocket. They never cashed in. They would have crushed with those two movies.
Mm-hmm. They might have been failures though, because think of like Hugh Grant. He was in that movie with Drew Barrymore.
They would have done great opening like, weekend.
I don't know. Joanna's rendition of All I Want for Christmas Is You was seen as too good to be true. The producers were worried that audiences wouldn't believe that a child was singing, so they asked her to make the next take a little less good. I get it. That's funny, because like, because when she's singing, there's times where I'm like, why did she mess up that? It's like really easy.
It's because they made her.
Yeah. Claudia Schiffer's cameo was never meant to happen. The producers wanted to cast someone who looked like the legendary supermodel, but predictably found this very difficult.
Okay. Hey, can you find us someone that looks like Claudia Schiffer? No.
Yeah.
No.
The solution, going direct to Claudia herself. I'm glad she did that, though. Similarly, Curtis, the producer, wanted a Laura Linney type actress to play Linney's role. So, I can see that. I think a lot of people are Laura Linney types, except they don't. The reason why they wanted a Laura Linney type is because they wanted an everyday plain Jane kind of person. Mm-hmm. Laura Linney is like the only plain Jane in Hollywood of that time.
Yeah.
Because this was still pretty glamour. Like, you are either glamorous or you are a good actress. If you could combine both, you would get a Best Actress Oscar.
Yeah.
Like, if you're glamorous and can, like, take off your makeup a bit to act, like, that is, you know, that is code for you're nominated for.
You're getting the Oscar.
Yeah.
Harvey Weinstein says yes.
But I think people really love that. Like, if you look at Best Actress winners, if there's a huge glamazon.
Did Angelina Jolie ever win it?
No. She won Best Supporting. But that's a weird category. That's like an honest category. But, you know, Aaron Brockovich, not that great. Like Monsters Ball, Halle Berry and Monsters Ball, not that great. It's just that these two actresses weren't as beautiful as they are in every other film. So it's like, oh, we've got to give it to them. This might be their only shot.
Oh.
They were so ugly in this role. That was so brave.
They slummed it.
Yeah. Charlize Theron as Eileen Wuornos, the serial killer in the movie Monster, she deserved it.
Yeah.
Because she not only uglied herself up and like gained 50 pounds, which is a lot for Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
But she was like, she was hideous. And she was
amazing. Not recognizable.
No.
Did she do that other movie where she was a mom?
Mm-hmm.
And the daughter's like, what's wrong with your body?
Yeah. Rodrigo Santoro's character was supposed to be British because everyone was supposed to be British, but they couldn't find the right actor.
Xerxes.
So yeah, that's who I have as my character name for him.
Xerxes.
Sarah and Carl, played by Laura Linney and Xerxes. Okay. I think that's enough.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, so we want to go through couple by couple and just talk about each one.
Yeah.
And then we can go talk about our favorite ones.
Yeah.
Or we can name our favorite couple. All right, first couple is?
Jamie and Aurelia.
Jamie and Aurelia.
Colin Firth and the Portuguese lady.
The Portuguese girl.
Yeah, I had her name. This is just so our audience is like, oh, okay, Colin Firth's one.
Yeah, Colin Firth's one. So what about this one? How are we breaking them down?
I don't know. We're just going to talk about it.
Well, this is going to be long. So Colin Firth was cheated on.
Mm-hmm.
His girlfriend and his brother,
mm-hmm.
which was awful. So he escapes to France, the countryside in France, to write a crime novel. And
on a typewriter.
On a typewriter, like an idiot.
And he has a new cleaning lady played by...
No, really, how pretentious. A typewriter?
Yeah, but writers are weird.
Yeah, they are. And that was dumb. I like the way it feels on my fingers. Shut up. Get yourself a laptop and write your book.
Well, now they make those typewriter keyboards.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Get that.
Well, you know it was just so they could jump in the lake.
I know.
I mean, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, so a lot of people, we should talk about this now because we'll mention it throughout. A lot of people hate Love Actually because they think it's like super problematic, non-PC. Problematic is the new term for PC. But I'm a 90s person, so it'll always be politically correct to me. They think this movie is problematic. They think this segment in particular, because he falls in love with her and she, like, without speaking to her, that it's sending a message that the less you talk, the more desirable you are. I call bullshit.
Yeah, that is.
She falls in love with him equally.
Exactly.
So you could say the same thing about him.
Her.
Like, no, well, yeah. But you can say the same thing about him. Like, he's more desirable the less he opens his mouth.
Yeah.
But if you look, they're saying the same thing. Okay, in this movie, you sort of have to go out on a limb and believe that love at first sight is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like this movie, it's so easy to believe that. This movie makes you a believer in love at first sight. And I think if you're not looking at it like that, you're just a hater. And you're just looking for something to write an article about.
Well, and bingo.
Hmm.
You need content.
Exactly.
You need content. You need to be not edgy, but you need to like make a splash. So how do you do that? You take a lot of people's, one of their favorite holiday movies, and tell them why it shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
And you go bit by bit, and you put your woke bullshit on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you get yourself some clicks. And most of those clicks are probably reading, the people reading, saying, fuck this thing. What else does it say? Oh, I hate this article.
Every comment board or every commentary I'm on that mentions Love Actually, there's one woman who's like, I can't watch that. That movie is so problematic.
Then don't
Here's
watch
a link
it.
To this Vox article.
Oh, yeah. Or Slate.
It's like,
yeah.
You don't, can you even say why it's problematic, or do you need to link to the article?
Which means they probably liked it. Then they read the article.
And
now they
and
don't
now
like
they
it.
Don't like it anymore. But this article is bullshit. Like, I can refute every single one of the points in this article, and I'm not going to do that, but... And then there was a more recent article from, like, Bustle or something. It was like, I still hate Love Actually 13 years later, and fine, it's not for you.
Yeah.
But not for you doesn't sell clicks, or whatever you're selling.
Oh, saying it wasn't for me doesn't... Yeah.
They both learned the language. They were so... in sync with each other. They didn't need language. They met each other and they looked at each other and that was it. And I have to believe that is true.
Yeah.
I'm a romance writer.
Like just the part where his phone was ringing,
mm-hmm.
and they couldn't, and they were both searching for the phone.
Mm-hmm.
That looked like a couple that had been married for a lot of years.
Yes. It's just, I think two people can meet and they're perfect.
Yeah.
This happens. It happens. It happened a lot before World War II. It happens a lot. Like, when there's a situation and you get married fast, like, sometimes that love sticks. Sometimes mm-hmm. you're the perfect match. And I feel like this movie is just, it's a rom-com. Why are you going to put a shitty romance in a rom-com? You're not. You're going to put the best romance. You're going to put the romance that defies everyone's expectations. That's what this movie is. And they do show you getting things wrong. Colin Firth started out in that like horrible relationship mm-hmm. with the cheating woman
yep.
and his brother.
His brother. Ugh.
And then there's like, you'll see later, we have like this like love triangle, two other love triangles. And we have jealousy and we have a lot of bad situations in this movie.
Sure do.
This isn't one of them. Jamie and Aurelia's love is true love.
Yep.
It might have just come on fast, but it is true love.
And it's stuck. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Next couple.
The Prime Minister, his official character name.
Yep.
The Prime Minister and Natalie.
So you picked the best two right away.
I listed them in the order of how I thought of them.
Because they're your two favorite.
They're not. They're not.
Okay. I like this one too because it's kind of a forced proximity. It's kind of a fish out of water with her.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Like, not a Romeo and Juliet, but kind of, because they're from two different...
I wouldn't say that.
No, yeah, I don't know what to call
it. It's a cross-class,
yeah,
I guess?
Something like that.
But that's assuming he's posh because of his accent. He might not be posh. There's one of my favorite British TV shows is The Tunnel, and it has Thomas Jefferson... Ooh, I forgot whose name I forgot. Stephen Delane.
Yeah.
He plays a detective. And everywhere he goes, he's interviewing people. And they're like, you're just this posh tosser or whatever they're
yeah.
saying. And he's like, I'm not posh. I'm just educated.
Yeah.
And he says that again and again. And he's like so offended to be posh, but he sounds posh.
I think Hugh Grant's character is that. Because his sister doesn't seem like...
His sister lives in the non-dodgy end of Wadsworth.
The same. They're from the same town.
Yeah.
He's just from the nicer end of it.
Yeah. So I think he's pretty middle class.
Yeah.
And I think all of his jokes and how he treats the household staff.
He just worked his ass off in college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they're more alike than we think.
Yeah.
This is a little more problematic because
it's a boss and employee situation.
Oh, I wasn't even going to go there. That's okay in my book.
Me too, but as long as both people are willing and he's not.
Yeah, as long as he's not taking advantage of her.
There's no. Exactly. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
It's mutual. It's understood. No one's gaining anything from it.
I understand that is. Okay. And we do see, like, he fires her because she flirts with. He catches her flirting with the president of America.
That's bad.
But she's not really flirting. Yeah, that is bad on his part.
That's bad.
Not on her part.
That's like, bad on his part.
That's bad on. And that is where his power comes into play. So it is a bad, like, power imbalance relationship.
It was. Yep.
I don't think Prime Minister Tea Lady is necessarily always a bad power imbalance, but and he did, he got it right sort of at the end.
He did. He fixed it.
I guess I'm never going to be one that like hates a bad power dynamic because I like weird power dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
They bring spice to a relationship. but anyway, everybody in the movie calls her fat constantly. And she's not.
Not at all.
She's just not skinny. Like, she is, like, really shapely.
Yeah.
She looks like every, like, Playboy centerfold.
Yes.
With clothes on. You just don't see them with clothes on. Very often.
Yeah, she looked good.
She looked great.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the jealous, like, bitches that work with her, like,
The chubby one?
Yeah.
Even he's like, is she chubby? I don't think she's chubby.
Yeah, I liked that. But then she doubles down, and she's like, there's a pretty sizable ass there. It's like,
And I could see his, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, there is.
I know.
Exactly. You nailed it, sister. That's why I was asking, where is she?
I did really love like seeing Natalie on screen because to me she's not chubby. She's probably wears a size 6 in clothes. It's just that she's not like the double zero that we're used to seeing on mm-hmm. a screen. And I remember being very proud that a curvy girl could get the prime minister when I first saw this.
Of all of the females, of all the heroines, she was my favorite one.
Yeah.
I thought she was the most attractive one. Even more than the
Mia.
Yeah.
I don't like Mia's face. She looks like a blow up doll. I think she has a horrible haircut too.
She did.
Doesn't really suit her.
No.
That actress is blonde now, by the way.
Is she?
Which I would be too if I had to play that role.
Just completely
she's
change who
probably
you are.
Vilified for the rest of her life.
And she's probably an awesome person.
I know.
What? How could you do that to Emma Thompson? I didn't.
I bet she's blonde all the time because so people don't like harass her in the supermarket. She's German though, so people don't probably do that there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Prime Minister and Natalie, like, I think they have some of my favorite scenes because you get the whole Hugh Grant dancing to that stupid song.
Yeah.
And he's, like, he does such a great job with that. He brings, like, half of the humor in this movie.
Yes, he does.
Because he's
Is he the main character? Person. Does he have the most screen time, you think, if you add it all up?
Him or Jamie?
Yeah.
I don't know, though, because Harry... Alan Rickman's character.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of office scenes because he's in half of Sarah's scenes.
That's true.
And Daniel, Sam's stepdad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, so there, I don't think you see the prime minister more than.
No, that's true.
But I like the, he gets some, you know, he gets that great grovel at the end. Like, it's very British grovel. He doesn't do a lot of groveling.
No, there's not a lot of groveling.
Just the fact that he says, like, what does he say? It's so great. Like, oh, I will be very sorry to drive away from you.
Yeah.
It's so nice. That's so great. But then she goes in her, like, cute self, fixes it. And then she also disrupts the power dynamic at the end and is seen kissing the prime minister, mm-hmm. which means she's not getting out of that relationship.
Nope.
Good for her.
First lady of England.
Yep. Because he's going to have to answer some questions after that.
Yep.
And those questions better not be like, she's just the catering manager.
Yeah. Who is this lady? I'm going to marry her.
I also like that she's his type. Like he sees her and yeah, it is a bit of insta-love. But he's charmed by her.
Yeah.
Like it's insta-love because he sees her and it's like, oh my God. I have this type and she is like, I have this type because I was meant to find her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think people do have a type. I feel like they have a type so that they will be drawn to the one. And she is his one. And then she starts cussing and he's just like
giggling.
He's giggling. And then like, and then he turns back and he sees her like blushing and she feels so bad. And he's like even charmed by that. Like yeah. He is in love at first sight. And it is so obvious.
Yeah.
But he's trying to be professional. And then he thinks she did this thing with the president and like she probably flirts with all the heads of state. And then it turns out she doesn't. And he feels like a jerk. But in a very British way, so he doesn't really apologize. But she knows he's sorry, because she's British too.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to talk about it.
No. All right. Next couple.
So, I like them. And I feel like she would... She's seen standing up to him. So I really feel like they will make a great married couple.
I agree.
And she'll be a great mom. She'll do like... fun crafts with the kids all the time. Colin Frizzle and the Americans.
Yeah.
This is just for lightness.
For lightness. Very non-realistic.
What?
He's going to just go to the first bar in mm-hmm. the middle of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Those three girls are going to be in it.
I think they could be.
Mm.
Shannon Elizabeth, is that the one he's eventually with?
That was at
with?
The end. Yeah, in the airport.
And Denise somebody? Richards?
I don't know. January Jones wasn't one of them?
Yeah, January Jones could be found in any bar ever.
That's true.
Walk into It'll Do down the street and she'll be there. January Jones is nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really think that those three girls are okay. In 2003, go to any bar and those three girls will be there.
Okay.
Any college town, especially. So yep. We'll just say it's like University of Wisconsin.
We're going to say that's in Madison.
Yep. So, yeah, I think that's absolutely accurate. And he could get them. Because he's got the accent. He is absolutely right.
My cute British accent. You don't have a British accent. Yes, I do. He does when he comes here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his friend, like, I remember thinking, like, this guy's got a good plan.
Yeah. And funny enough, mm-hmm. the accent does work here.
Mm-hmm.
And the accent they love over there is ours.
I don't see how that's possible.
They love it.
Yeah, I get it. You've been there.
Because it's different. but it's close enough. It's close enough, but different enough.
I met a guy in the Heathrow Airport. He was American.
Yeah.
But he had an Irish accent.
What?
He was a missionary's kid, and he had spent, like, his parents went to Ireland as missionaries, and he lived his entire life in Ireland. We met in the smoking lounge of Heathrow Airport.
Was he, like, from Boston or something?
I don't know where he was from. I remember talking to him. I don't remember, like, anything we talked about. I was just like, you have that accent and you're American? That's not good. For shame.
All right. Are we going to go deep into the frizzle and the Americans?
No, just the fact that I think he was really on to something, and he was, and I don't find that any part about that scene, except for Denise, whatever her name is, when she kisses the guy at the end when they come back to England.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody is actually that friendly.
No.
That's
actually a red flag.
And the fact that there's, like, he has a foursome. I think that's a little bit...
Yeah.
I think that's a little going too far. But finding all those women at the bar, no, I don't think that's far-fetched.
No, probably not.
So that's it.
Okay.
So next we have Karen and Harry and Mia. Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman and the German woman.
Yeah. This was the...
This is the heartbreaking part of this movie.
It is. But... okay, so Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman are married. Mia is Alan Rickman's secretary. And they're flirting it up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's midlife. His wife is midlife. Mia is not midlife. She is young. And she digs him.
And she's... gorgeous, and she looks like sin. Like she does. She looks
like if temptation had a look.
Exactly,
it's her. She looks like her. It looks like her.
Yeah. And she is just like giving him overt messages, like spreading her legs open.
Mm-hmm. Like dark corners to do naughty things, yeah. She says to him. It's like,
and her voice is even sexy. Her voice is really good.
Yeah,
she's like dug deep and gravelly.
He's in a bad spot that he's not helping himself out of.
Right, where because he is lapping up the attention, yes, that he is getting.
Where he needed to put the boundary of, hey, this isn't going to happen.
This is where Mia needs to be reassigned.
Yes.
Like, this is that situation. This, yes, isn't even like, okay, dude, shut it down. Don't let your mind go there. This is...
This isn't going to work out here.
Right.
Because...
Please find anywhere else to work. Because
your advances are actually harassing me.
They are. She's sexually harassing.
Yeah.
She just doesn't hold the power.
Yeah. So he fails.
Yes.
And there's the hilarious scene where he's buying the necklace for her, but he's Christmas shopping with his wife.
Yeah.
But his wife thinks he's Christmas shopping for her in the jewelry aisle.
She's excited, but she even like, oh, she's such a good, this role is written so well because it's like everything women do. Like she sees her husband buying jewelry and she even says to him like, oh, don't worry, you don't have to buy me jewelry. It's like, oh, that in and of itself is heartbreaking because how many women like tell their husband, like it's just a sacrifice that like wives make. Like, you don't have to do nice things for me. I don't expect it. After all these years of you not doing anything, I've come to not expect anything from you, is what she's saying. But at the same time, she's like, she's just accepting this lack of attention.
Yeah.
Because it's like she's past that in her life. She's like reached crone stage. She's like, she's skipped the maiden and mother, and now she's just old and it's fine. She's going to live her life without needing or wanting anything anymore. Yeah. And it's so sad because so many people do this. And then he buys the necklace, and he's never bought her anything good, and he buys it for his mistress.
Yeah.
And she sees it in his coat pocket.
And she's excited, like, oh, he did buy it for me.
Yeah.
But no.
That means he loves me. And he doesn't.
And he bought her Joni Mitchell CDs, which she loved.
He bought her a CD. And it would have been a great gift if she had not known that he bought a necklace for somebody else.
And she knew about Mia, and she even warned.
That sucks.
She said, hey, that Mia's gorgeous. Oh, is she? You know she is.
Yeah.
That's what he said. You know she is. Be careful with that one.
Yeah.
Or she said, be careful there. Mm-hmm. She even warned him, like, I see you. It's all right now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let it go further than what it is.
See, this is where Harry needed to be a bit more like Mark. He needed to take an example from that love triangle.
Yeah.
This is when, if you're attracted to somebody, you shut it down.
Yep.
You don't dance with them.
Nope.
And flirt back with them.
Here's the difference, though. Yeah. Mark was not middle-aged.
Right.
Mark is an attractive young man. Who was shutting it down because he has more shots.
Yeah.
He has more years left in his career there.
Yeah.
And yeah, Keira Knightley, he's not going to do much better than that.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah.
Like, I was said Natalie is the best one, and I forgot Keira Knightley's in this movie, so.
And she's so great.
Yeah.
Like, her personality is so great.
I will say, though. Does this sound bad?
Like, well, are we jumping to Peter, Juliet, and Mark?
I guess I'll save it for that.
Well, no, we should jump there because that'll be like, that's a...
Okay. You know. So, Natalie has the best figure.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Better than Keira Knightley's.
Yeah.
But Keira...
If you like her figure...
Who?
I mean, if you like curves, then Natalie's better.
Yes.
If you like... I don't know, sporty, tall, lean, Keira Knightley's better figure.
That's true.
For you.
For me,
Natalie
is better.
Yeah.
But Keira Knightley's prettier.
Yes.
Like, not even close.
She's probably like my like number two, like out of all beautiful people ever.
Can I guess your number one's Michelle Pfeiffer?
Yes.
Number two, Keira Knightley. If you have a third...
I haven't really thought past them.
Is it Angelina Jolie?
She'd be there.
Yeah.
Salma Hayek would be in it too, in my top five of beautiful humans.
Yeah, I like Salma Hayek.
Which they all have like very different faces.
Mm-hmm. Gwen Stefani.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I like overtly feminine.
Gwen Stefani's in the same category as Keira Knightley. The sporty, tall.
Yeah. I don't like their bodies. For me. Like, I don't look at them and think I want to look like her.
So Keira Knightley and Gwen Stefani is faces.
Yes.
Michelle Pfeiffer's face.
Michelle Pfeiffer's face, yeah.
Selma Hayek's body.
And face.
And face. So all so Selma Hayek's number one.
Yeah. She has a great personality too. I really like her as a person.
Yeah.
She's like a really good person. And cool.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the third or the second love triangle in this one. So who is it?
Peter and Juliet, and then Mark.
And Peter's not really a factor.
And that's a shame, because that was before people knew how brilliant Chiwetel Ejiofor was.
Yeah.
We know that now. He's great.
Is that, was he in 12 Years a Slave?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he got his due later on. Yeah. People know now. And it's cool how jam-packed this movie is with just great actors. But that's what you get when you're making a British movie.
Yeah, that's true. and before they hit their stride.
Some of them. But Kieran, then you've got Liam Neeson, Colin Firth, and Hugh Grant, and Alan Rickman in the same movie.
Yeah, Billy Nye, too.
No, I think he had been in the Underworld movies, but that's kind of it.
Really?
Yeah, he was not a big...
No? So this put him over, probably?
This is the movie where I first took notice of him. And he's later on our list of couples.
Well, this love triangle is the two married people and the best...
Peter and Juliet.
Peter and Juliet are married.
It's the wedding that starts out the movie.
Yes. And what's the other guy's name?
Mark.
He's in love with Keira Knightley, but he also loves his friend.
Yes.
So he's like, I can't.
So he's...
I snoozed, I loosed.
So if you think of any enemies to lovers... So this is really interesting. This needed to be its own movie.
Mm.
This has enough merit. This has enough there to be its own movie.
Yeah.
But you have like two tropes. You have Peter and Juliet, who are this like just really sweet young couple. And Keira Knightley's real young in this.
She is.
But that's okay. I think she pulls off a marriage. She's fine.
I don't think she's that young. She's in her 20s.
I thought people think she's like 18 in this, and she had like no business getting married. That's another criticism I've heard about this. Like, Keira Knightley, she's 12 and she shouldn't be getting married.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's fine. She can be married. She pulls off like a 20 something person.
Yeah.
People play not their age all the time.
Yeah.
But Peter and Juliet are great. They have a lot of fun together. They're not like stick in the muds, but they're not like they're not, you know, partiers. They're just like really the perfect youthful mm-hmm. couple.
They are.
And then you have Mark, who was Peter's best man. And he is this awful Grinch of a human being. And he's nice to his friend Peter, but he's a dick to Juliet. And to the extent that at their wedding... Because he keeps filming them, and Laura Linney comes up and asks, "Do you love him?" And he's like taken aback. Like, I think he expects somebody to suspect his secret at some point.
But that's the wrong secret. She thought he was in love with
Peter.
Peter, yeah.
Which you can see how that would be.
Yep.
But no, he's in love with his best friend. And you can see this happening.
His best friend's wife.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry. So you can see how, like, you know, when Peter probably first met Juliet and he started dating, and he would go back to Mark and is like, "I met the best girl. Like, she's beautiful and she's sweet and she's talented or whatever she is." And then finally, after a few months of, you know, dates, and then Mark meets her and he's thinking, "Shit, like,
why didn't I meet her?"
Yeah. So he's always been... Like, he says, it's a self-preservation thing.
Yeah.
Like,
I have to be mean to you because I love you.
Yeah.
And I can't have you, so.
Yeah. So this is like enemies to lovers. And so.
So it's not enemies to lovers, it's enemies to friends.
But it starts out with, yeah, and she's not his enemy. She's trying to like.
She doesn't understand what she did.
Yeah, she thinks she did something to him.
That's how nice she is, that she thinks she messed up.
And it's so nice. And then she finds the videotape and it's just her.
And
like you can see the moment where she like notices because she's like, she starts to say something, like to joke with him. And then she realizes before she's going to go farther, mm-hmm. she's like, oh, no. So then you see him doing the, this is where the cards, the yeah, poster board
the
and the markers.
Part of the movie, yeah.
Which I don't mind. I don't think this is creepy. I think this is what you do when you're in, when you are in love with somebody you shouldn't be in love with. You shut it down.
Yep.
You don't dwell on it. You do what you have to do.
You rip the Band-Aid off.
Until you're not in love with that person anymore.
Yeah.
And it sucks for a while. And yeah, he can't. He's going to act creepy because he can't just go and have a friendly relationship with her.
No.
That's going to like set off major issues for
him. He needs to go away for a while, fall in love with somebody else, and then come back.
Yeah. So, and then he does the thing and he's like, and he explains it all on the cards.
Mm-hmm.
And he explains it to her. And he even said, like, he's lighthearted, like, I'll be in love with you until whatever, until you look like this. And it's a picture of a mummy.
Yeah.
And then he walks away and he says, enough. And like, I don't think that is creepy.
No.
He wasn't trying to get her. He wasn't even trying to sneak behind his friend's back. He was trying to explain something to the person who realized his secret
mm-hmm.
in private to not hurt his friend. And I think he explained it well, and then he can move on.
Yeah.
I don't think that's creepy.
No.
I don't think it's creepy. Yeah.
It wasn't creepy. It was tasteful and classic scene.
Yeah.
A classic scene.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's anything problematic with it.
Unless you want to get hits on your website, then super problematic.
I understand why people can think that. They can think it all they want. I know everybody is supposed to not treat people poorly, and he was treating her poorly. And that sucks for her.
But it explains it all. Like, people treat people shitty in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting a glimpse into this people's world.
Also, people have to remember, this is 2003, when people were still mean to each other.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you cannot be mean to people, except for over Facebook and shaming people.
Yeah. If you're a Republican, you can be mean to them all you want.
Yeah, but even that is still mostly through, like, Facebook shaming.
Yeah.
Like, that's acceptable to be mean. It's not acceptable to be mean to people's face. Like, it was in the 90s. Like, everyone was just mean to each other. Watch Seinfeld. Like, people were like that.
Yeah.
I remember when Seinfeld was on. It wasn't, like, it was funnier than normal people, but that's how people were.
Do you think that's better? Because if you know that person's mean in real life, it's like, ah, I'm not going to hang out with them.
I think people were honest back then, and they're not honest now. So I don't think you ever really know where you stand with your friends now.
Yeah.
Because I think people still think that way. Like, you can try all you want not to think bad things or not to say bad things. You're still thinking them.
And I think you think people more resentful nowadays?
Yep.
Yeah. It's more insidious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, bad. And I think it's creating toxic environments.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if everybody's mean, this is why I think situations like war and college dormitories are effective places to find friendships. Because when you have
to... Because it sucks for everybody.
It's not just that. You have to deal with people who aren't like you. And sometimes when you have to deal with people who aren't like you, you learn that they have merits too. And maybe you wouldn't hang out with that person.
Unless you were forced to.
Unless you were forced to. But because you were forced to, you realize, like, wow, that person really does have some kind of value to my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think nowadays, when you, like, And this isn't so much true anymore that like Facebook's pretty much dead. But before, like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago when Facebook groups were everything.
Yeah.
Like people would only hang out with Facebook groups. Like they only thought that their friends, their tribe was online. That's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Thank God Facebook is pretty much, what's it, catabolizing itself?
What does that mean?
It's eating itself.
It's cannibalizing just itself?
Cannibalizing, yeah.
It's, I think, just, you're blending two different words.
Yeah, I think so too.
Metabolizing.
I wasn't sure where I was going with that, but now I know where I'm going with this.
Cannibalizing, metabolizing.
It's like a supernova. It got so big, it's burning out now. Because all it is just boomers and ads.
Yeah.
That's all Facebook is now. It's not... I go on it, I look at my notifications, and it's things other people are doing. It's like, that's how, is that a notification for me?
I go on it to see what people are doing in their Hobonichi planners so I can do the same thing.
I don't even look at groups anymore.
That's all I do.
The one group I look at a lot now is like people who make rinks in their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And all it is about like bragging about how much money they have.
Mm-hmm.
Look at my yard and this full size rink I have. And it's like, hey, how do you guys do this thing for your full size international size hockey rink in your backyard? It's like, we shovel the snow off the pond.
Mm.
And we play on that is how we do it. Cause it's free.
I like Facebook for my planner groups and romance reading recommendations. That's sort of it.
Yeah.
But like you have to put your obligatory kids pictures up there so your boomer family can see it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
That's what it's for.
Yeah.
Boomers and ads.
Last
couple.
No, we have a couple more.
Okay. Oh, I thought we were about to wrap it up.
No, sorry. Well, Judy and John, we can do them real quick because they're not a big part of it.
Who's that?
The movie.
Oh,
couple?
The stunt, the body doubles.
Yeah, which I think they're supposed to be for porn, but I don't know that porn spends that much time getting body doubles for lighting purposes.
Was it porn or was it just like for love scenes and movies?
I thought it was for love scenes and movies, but something I read said it was, they were like porn body doubles. Why would porn
just use the people?
Porn is so cheaply produced, I don't think that they would get body doubles.
Yeah, I'm going to say that was for like a love scene in a real movie.
Yeah, I was thinking like Brad Pitt was playing his character.
And he said he was a body double for Brad Pitt.
Yeah, in 7 years in Tibet.
Yeah, that wasn't a porn. Mm-hmm. It was for a love scene in a movie.
So see, Vox, you got it wrong again.
Yep, to fit your narrative.
Mm-hmm. That was fine. That the whole point of that scene was the juxtaposition between like they're naked, they're pretending to have sex, but yet they're both so shy when it came to dating each other. It's adorable.
It was.
I feel like this movie is like, because of these actors being so good and because it's British, it worked. If this would not have worked if it was set in America.
No.
We don't have the
nuance.
Yeah. Yeah. We take everything like too far.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next we'll do Sarah and Carl, Laura Linney and Xerxes.
Oh, yeah. That was a sad one.
I love their relationship, too.
Because he really liked her, and her codependency dismissed him.
Yeah.
And you could see the devastation on his face.
And I think this is an important one. Like, this is something you could really nitpick about the psychology. And I remember this trailer. The trailer included that moment where she goes behind the wall and like dances,
mm-hmm,
like frantically. I'll always remember that part being on the trailer. But you know, like that feeling of like she finally got this guy that she had been crushing on forever. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he's so attractive, like he's out of her league attractive.
Yeah.
And he's still really nice.
Yeah.
He tells her goodbye every day at work. And he's smart. Like he's carrying those things, so he's an architect, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
That's what I think that that firm does. And he carries tubes with him.
Yeah.
So he's a smart architect. She's probably also an architect because that would have kept her in Britain. I don't know. We don't know what she does. But they all work at the same place. And I also love her relationship with her boss. Like, as much as we hate Harry,
it's a very brother and sister relationship.
He's such a cool guy. So that makes it even worse when he cheats on his wife, the Alan Rickman character.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a great boss. And, like, the fact that her cell phone rings constantly on the job and she answers it, like, nowhere in America.
And he's like, oh, you better get that.
I know.
There it is again. But because he knows her situation and he's.
But she's creating the situation. And that's the problem with Carl. Like, she has this crush on this guy, Carl, and he's so nice to her, and he's also kind of shy, but he says goodnight to her every day when they leave work,
mm-hmm.
and he's obviously not a player, because he's at work late, just like her.
Yeah, probably because she is.
Yeah. And then finally, he, like, it's the last dance of the Christmas party, and he, like, works up the nerve to dance with her. And the way he, like, holds her hand is so nice. It, like, there's such, that's my favorite dance, because I love the way, like, he holds her hand.
Yeah.
It's just very, like, warm and comforting. And
so, one thing leads to another.
He goes back to her apartment, and
they're getting it on. And her phone rings.
And her phone rings.
And it's her brother.
And he says, will it help him if you answer it? And it's like he is willing to be, you know, pushed aside if it's going to help her brother. And she says, probably not. And she's never thought about it before. And no one has challenged her connection to her brother. I think they're all just annoyed by the phone. So I think that probably does push her to be there for him whenever he needs her to be.
Mm-hmm.
But he is in an inpatient mental treatment facility, and he's probably never going to leave from the looks of it.
Yeah.
They can't even be in the same room together without a guard watching them because her brother's violent. But yet every time he calls multiple times an hour, it seems like, mm-hmm. she feels the need to answer the phone. And so she can't have a life. She can have no life apart from her brother. And that's her fault. I mean, she really needs...
She needs to put boundaries up.
She needs boundaries. She needs to create a life for herself. She needs to go to Codependence Anonymous and read Codependent No More. And she needs to learn how to deal with her brother. But at the moment where, like, it's, we're seeing the relationship through her lens. Her boss is telling her to go, like, go tell him you want to, what is it? You want to marry him and have lots of sex and babies.
Yeah.
Like, she's the one with the crush, not him. But at the same time, when they stop, like, she stops to answer the phone, he's the one that's hurt.
Yeah.
She says, like,
I'm not busy.
No, I'm not busy. And it, like, crushes him. I love that. That's great.
Yeah. You feel for him.
Yeah. And it's great. But it's great that you feel for him, because he's, like, he's the desired object.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they gave that, you know, desired object. Like, he's not a thing anymore. This is another thing. Like, the Brits got it right.
Yeah.
He's not just this thing on a shelf that's pretty to look at. Like, they gave him a soul. And in, like, the 30 seconds he has screen time, that's really hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I really like that. Then we have Daniel and Sam and Joanna.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about them.
Because this movie is jam-packed with good stuff.
Yeah. So the Liam Neeson, the kid from
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. The one that was
the most adorable child ever. But then he grew up and he looks exactly the same and it's weird.
And it's really weird. And then his love interest, who's the American girl that's in England for some reason.
That has the same name as his mom.
Has the same name as his mom who just died. And Liam Neeson, who's in love with his wife, who just died. But he was a great dad, even though he was the stepdad.
Mm-hmm.
He did, he helped that kid needed him through that time. And every opportunity Liam Neeson had to just crush fatherhood, he absolutely crushed it.
That's true.
Every single time.
Yep.
And that was, I think that was the love story there with those
yeah.
two.
Yeah. This is one of my love triangles, sort of. I mean, it's not a love triangle.
It's not a love triangle. It's a Cyrano and Roxanne kind of situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Liam Neeson, Cyrano.
Yeah.
And he's just,
and he's using romance movies.
Yep. Titanic.
To help his, to help his son find love. And I love that he takes it seriously.
Yep.
And that kid is so adorable because he looks like 8.
And he never tells him, like, oh, you better not.
I know.
It's like, you need to go for it, man.
Yeah. Because I think his wife had just died. And he thinks, and he knows, I never told your mom enough. Like, any chance you have to tell, somebody that you love.
And he
them,
probably told her every day.
Probably. Yeah, I think, that's such a warm-hearted part of this movie. And it's funny.
A lot of funny parts with those two.
Yeah.
And they fed well, they had good chemistry.
The two of them? Yeah.
On screen.
Yeah.
And I think Liam Neeson's kind of like a Tom Brady. You just get better with being with him. Your stats go up because he's on your team.
Well, I think they also really got that kid's age right. Because, he's going through this thing. Like, his mom just died and he's a kid. Like, it sucks. Like, he's not even a teenager yet.
No,
he
needs his mom a lot. He and needs she's his not mom, gonna be there.
Right. But at the same time, he's experiencing for the first time love, and he doesn't minimize it, and nobody around him minimizes it. And I love that the kid is so honest with himself about he's in love.
I think,
and I know it's because it had an adult writing his lines, but still, I love it.
But I think you need your dad in that part when you're a boy.
I agree. And I think so often dads give the wrong advice, and Liam Neeson didn't, and that's what's so refreshing.
Yeah.
And I think, at the end, when he wins, there's, that huge airport scene. I love that the kid got that epic airport airport scene.
Yeah, the kid gets the airport scene.
Yeah. I mean, Colin Firth had it, too. Like, the walking the streets of whatever, Portugal.
Yeah.
To find his...
So did
Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant.
Yes.
But a kid got one.
I know. That was great. I love that.
Yeah.
And she's a minor part of the story. That's why they're my love triangle. My third.
Yeah.
My third. But the kid got it. But then that hug at the end.
Yeah.
It's such a kid thing.
The hug.
That's not a teenager thing. He goes back to being a kid. And I think it could only work with, someone who's 12 or 11 or however old he's supposed to be.
He learned her language too.
Yeah, because she's a musician.
She's a musician, and he learned how to play the drums.
And he did really learn how to play the drums. That was one of the trivia things. Okay, and last couple we have is Billy Mack and Joe, the manager.
Which is it's a bromance.
Yeah.
No, it's not a sexual relationship.
Yeah.
It's two dudes realizing that I love you, man.
You're the person I want to spend Christmas with.
Yeah. Because
Christmas is supposed to be with the ones you love.
Yeah.
Yep.
He even said that. He's like, and you're the love of my life.
Yeah.
And Joe, his name's Joe, mm-hmm. was just like in tears. He was so touched by it.
I know.
That, like, his famous rock star friend left Elton John's Christmas party.
Yep.
To just sit on the couch and drink beers with him.
Yep.
That was cool.
Yeah. I love those two guys together.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I wanted to talk about. Well, did you have a favorite part?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have favorite parts, I'm assuming.
Well, both parts with the gift wrapping part is just the slapstick hilariousness that only Rowan Atkinson can give you.
Yes.
But my other favorite part was Hugh Grant going door to door looking for Natalie and got to the little girl's house and they asked for Christmas carols, not knowing that that was the prime minister. Just sing us carols. And he did.
Yeah.
And then his...
Which is very British, I feel like.
And his bodyguard just hits this like deep...
Baritone.
Yeah. Nailing it. And Hugh Grant, like, his eyes widened, like, how are you doing this?
Yeah.
But keep singing. Like, that's my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
Because you know they didn't tell him how to react. They probably didn't even tell him that guy could sing like that.
Yeah.
And that was his natural reaction.
Yeah.
Or they did, and he's that good. And you believe that that's his natural reaction.
With Hugh Grant, I feel like he's that good.
Yeah.
Like, he's just so natural.
And you know it only took one take.
I think that's, you know, British are really good at acting.
It's all the passive aggressiveness.
Maybe I fit in there. My favorite part, I have a lot of them, but the one that I'm going to highlight is my character of the angel.
Yeah, Rowan Atkinson.
So this is my personal fan theory that apparently other fans have as well, but I've never shared this with anyone. My fan theory is that Rowan Atkinson's character, he probably has a name, but he is the angel character, and he could even be an angel.
I don't think he has a name, and I think it should be the angel.
I just looked through Love or IMDb about this movie to get everyone's names right, and I didn't see him in the credits. And maybe
he's way down on there
because
there's so many people in this movie.
There are. But even angels have names, so if he is named, then he might not.
Like Dudley?
Yes. So I think he's an angel. I think he was sent himself to destroy or try to prevent. You know how he just keeps going and going with the wrapping?
Mm-hmm.
I'll just pop it in a Christmas box. And he needs a sprig of holly. And he wafts the lavender, like he crushes the lavender and then smells his hands, like anything to prolong this gift wrapping experience so that Emma Thompson comes back and sees her husband buying jewelry for another woman.
Oh, his name is Rufus.
Well, he can be Rufus the Angel.
Isn't that I want to say, isn't that something? Oh no, that was Chris Rock in Dogma, where he was the Rufus, the 14th apostle.
Oh.
Or 13th apostle, whatever it is.
Yeah, so not an angelic name. And then at the end, he is helping the little boy get through security.
Yeah.
Just the way he shows up in the scenes, like he just pops up, which is, I mean, it could be accounted for by just, you know, that's his role in this, and they just wanted to give Mr. Bean a part in the movie. But I love the way he's like, he's looking for his ticket, and then he's like going through every garment that he has.
Yeah.
But then he turns around and gives Liam Neeson this like sly expression,
like
I did that for your son.
Yeah.
So that's my theory. And that's my favorite part. Like that look that he gives Liam Neeson.
Yeah. So both of our favorite parts were looks.
Yeah. But that's why you can't like subtle, I mean British acting, man.
Or our yeah. Both of our favorite parts were subtle looks that make the scene.
Yes.
And the scene would be not the same without the subtleness of
yes.
those looks.
Yeah.
All right, so let's just go to, does this movie stand the test of time?
Yes.
Yes. It is a Christmas classic. It should be in your 25-day rotation yep. of Christmas movies.
Yep.
And
totally agreed.
With that, we've gone pretty long, and I think it's a good spot to end.
I agree.
We will talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.